Spud Addy, you Spud and I'm Addy. Just listen, you'll glisten, cause you'll be so happy. Our podcast is random talk on this and on that. What did you expect from potatoes and fat? Yeah, what did you expect from potatoes and fat?
Thank you, Singing Addy and Singing Addy. I am Addy and this is Spud.
Hello!
And we are going to hopefully entertain you for the next just under an hour. It has to be just under an hour, otherwise.
Just under.
Well, otherwise Audio Boom and iTunes get upset. You told me, you said it always has to be just under an hour.
Yes. It has to be, otherwise they come around the house and like break our kneecaps and stuff. They're so, very, very aggressive.
I feel if I kind of say we're going to entertain you for the next hour, then that's actually a lie. So it's, we're going to entertain you for the next just under. In fact, now it's just under an hour because I've been talking
because you keep explaining it all.
I do. Yeah, it's really getting less all the time. And people are right. I'm going to flip an imaginary coin. Up it goes. Bouncing off a couple of things. Over to the left. Over to the right. It's back. And it says Spud. You're first. Go.
Spud, it's me. Right. Okay. So the first thing I feel we should discuss this evening on the episode 5. Is it five?
God, we're getting old, man.
Can't imagine when it gets to like 100 and something. We'll be like, what number is it? I have no idea where we're at.
Yeah, so, anyway. Like Spud Addy episode Oblivion Infinity.
SummerSlam.
SummerSlam. Yes.
SummerSlam.
Spud came around my house yesterday and we watched SummerSlam and we had Lebanese food.
Nice.
I was very proud of myself. I didn't make a lesbian or Lebanese joke once. I wanted to because the word Lebanese and the word lesbian are very similar. So
I can actually back that up. You didn't once. I don't remember one. Sorry,
I thought about it, but there was. I mean, if you'd given me a setup, I couldn't resist. I still would have done it. Not that you know it's necessarily that funny, but it's topical.
It is. So SummerSlam.
Yes.
For you wrestling fans out there, a few things of note happened. Just a few. No, it was overall good show, I feel. Do you agree?
Well, overall, you know, there was a highly controversial moment, you know, and especially looking at Raw the next day, you know, the returning superstar, the myth, the legend, the, you know, the John Stewart. I mean, it's just, you know, I think it's a superstar for the ages.
He is. Yes. He came in. He made a few jokes that people didn't really care about.
I thought those jokes were quite funny.
I thought they were as well, but apparently in the arena they didn't go down too well. But and then Mick Foley came out and obviously was there just to tell one joke as well. But I liked it. And then he interfered in. Oh, spoilers, everyone. Spoilers. Everyone, be aware of the spoilers. So if you're listening to it in your car, turn down the sound.
I think they should have seen it by now.
Oh, no, I've got told off once for spoiling the end of series one of The Walking Dead, which was about 5 years ago. And I'm not joking.
Someone's asked you to. That's fine. But there comes a point where it gets a bit weird.
Cool.
Been at that production meeting, you know, when they sat down and kind of gone, right, we need a way out of this John Cena, Seth Rollins match, but without necessarily having either of them win particularly fairly, or, you know, we don't want a completely clean finish. You know, how are we going to do this? And they kind of think, oh, we could use a chair. We could have a run in from the authority. We could have like one of their old tag partners coming in. We could have like a ring collapse. We could have like, you know, one of them gets, you know, overcome with emotion and, you know, rages on the other one and gets disqualified. One of them might suffer an injury in quotes and you have to kind of call the match off and, you know, and he's trying to gut it out, you know, and, you know, they could stand that whole broken the nose thing and have John Cena trying desperately to fight through the broken nose, but the blood is just too worse. Or we could have the old presenter of the Daily Show run out and hit one of them with a chair.
Who do you think thought of that idea? Do you reckon it was any big guy or do you reckon it was one of the writers?
I don't know, but that's what they went with.
Vince is the head of the table and they're all shooting these ideas at him. He goes, no, it has to be John Stewart, damn it.
It's got to be John Stewart. He's famous. We'll end up on the front page of everything. And they the thing that annoys me, they did.
Yeah, they did. But did you hear John Stewart? So obviously, if people haven't watched it, and spoilers again, John Stewart hit John Cena on the stomach with a chair and allowed Seth to defeat him.
Because he loves Ric Flair's that much.
Because he loves Ric Flair.
Came out on Monday Night Raw and said, wasn't really all that bothered, to be honest. I thought it was quite a nice idea.
I was a I'm a big John Cena fan, which is a load of crap. You know, backstage, he's like, God damn it, John Cena. But yes, that was interesting. And then he got the attitude adjustment. So that was unexpected. Of all the outcomes, we were both shooting back and forth of the predictions of that match.
Neither of us suggested John Stewart ran out and hit John Stewart in the chair.
No one. And there's also people online connecting the dots that weren't even there. Him saying he's a traditionalist and he's really upset about Brock, you know, breaking the streak with The Undertaker.
Yeah.
And they should have seen this coming. How would you see this coming from that sentence? Yeah. You wouldn't just automatically go.
I mean, I like the Undertaker John screwed John with the different stuff.
Yeah.
It was cool. But what did you think of SummerSlam?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was... I think the end didn't need the controversialness of it all, but apart from that, I enjoy it.
On reflection, I actually quite like it.
There's some people looking into things like that. Taker, part of the storyline is Taker that positioned himself on purpose, knowing that he was going to tap, positioned himself like that because he's such the veteran. But we'll get onto that in a minute. What I did want to discuss is my slight disappointment of, and this is one of our questions, so I'm going to tie this up into two things at once, was the tag team celebrity match. So we had Stephen Amell, which is the Arrow, and yeah. Adrian Neville versus Stardust and King Barrett.
Yeah.
Again, as I said to you at the time, I was a little bit disappointed he wasn't in full Arrow gear with the mask on, everything exactly the way. Shot one of them with an
arrow. For those of you that haven't seen SummerSlam, though, even those of you who aren't even wrestling fans, before every match, on a pay-per-view, they have a little kind of video montage that kind of gets you all, you know, tells you the plot, reminds you what's going on, gets you pumped up, makes you go, oh yeah, I want to see it, you know. And there's been some, you know, throughout the years, there have been, you know, some amazing ones and lots of completely forgettable ones. But the build-up, the one they used for this thing was like a pseudo comic book adventure complete with drawings and special effects and speech bubbles. And they must have spent a long time on it. And it was really, a really, really good little build up the video.
Yeah, it was like static pictures in comic book panels. It was good. It was very, very, very good. And I never realised how much Stardust does resemble a comic book villain until they actually pointed it out to me quite blatantly, like with his silly laugh and everything else. It's like, why didn't I see that before? But yeah, unfortunately, Arrow didn't come down in full garb with Dingle at ringside, which is a character. I know you don't watch Arrow. That's one of his main characters in the thing.
It's called Dingle.
Yeah, Dingle. Dingle. No, Diggle. Diggle, sorry.
Diggle. Dingle's another word for...
Dingle means penis, basically. But he didn't shoot anyone with an arrow, and he didn't smoke bomb out the ring, which three things I wanted to be covered on it, and it wasn't. But I think he held his own.
I opened up a Hearthstone pack earlier, and there's a new card called Bash.
Right.
Which, ask any of the kids who I teach at school these days what Bash is, and it's a wank.
Ah. That's interesting. Do you reckon they meant to do that? Or?
I don't think so. But, you know, then I opened a second bash and it was a golden bash.
Did you give yourself 15 minutes to rest in between having to do bashes?
No, I stayed. My mind went to a very weird place between a golden shower and a bash. And I had to have a little laugh.
I did think that, but I didn't think you were going to explain it for everyone. golden bash.
Anyway, sorry, you were disappointed about him not coming out wearing a hoodie
and shooting someone with a bow and arrow. Yeah, I was better. But overall, I thought he held his own.
It was one of the. I will say a few things in favour of that one. It was one of the better celebrity crossovers because, first of all, it wasn't in the main event. Secondly, it was kind of done purely for fun between some kind of mid-carders whilst loving the thrill of them there. Secondly, he could actually wrestle. And by wrestle, I don't mean like, you know, he was outstanding or anything like that. But, you know, he did a few moves. He did his little thing. Everyone cheered. Woohoo! And then we all forget about it and move on. And, you know, if they're going to have celebrity crossovers, it should probably be like that. Not Jon Stewart hitting John Cena with a chair in one of the biggest title matches of the year.
But he loves flair, man. Come on now. He loves flair. He loves that crazy old guy. Nothing really else happened of note, really. I mean, we had...
There was some really good matches. It was really
good. There was good matches, but I feel everything was all about the main event, which was obviously Taker in the rematch of the WrestleMania match that ended the streak, Taker against Brock.
Well, now that's a huge match, just because, like, whether you're a wrestling fan or not a wrestling fan, you probably have heard of The Undertaker. And Brock Lesnar is one of the biggest sporting stars on the planet, thanks to his UFC run. Not everyone's going to have heard of him, but, you know, if you're aware of that world, you know of it. And, of course, This was based on the losing the Undertaker streak. So this was a huge match, which basically sold the whole show. And I was really worried, as I said to you before, that the match was going to suck. And and then I was worried because it was a 4-hour show, which is too long. Not even WrestleMania needs to be 4 hours long. It's just too long. You burn out. And I was just worried that the match wasn't going to live up to it, but it did. I thought it was a very good match. It was well paced. I thought there was a nice balance of stunts. Undertaker was bumping all over the place. Brock didn't look weak, but was able, but still, sold at various points. There were some nice classic moments, like the cheesy laughing at each other.
Oh God, I was just about to say that. Have you seen all the GIFs out today about that? Literally, I'm watching one right now of Brock laughing at him, and it just keeps going on loop. Them laughing at each other. It's brilliant. I could sit all day just watching these two just laugh at each other. It's great. Love it. But that bit was brilliant when they started laughing at each other and then punching each other's faces in again. That was great. Oh, it was good. But yeah, I thought I was exactly the same boat as you. I was so worried. I was like, oh, Undertaker's, getting quite old now and oh dear. And then I thought it was great. I thought it was very, very entertaining. And we always moan about the commentators, how uninterested they seem. They were well into that one. Oh my God. It was good.
On that link thing though, it's like, quality over quantity, dude. And it's like if you went to see a film and they told you it was 3 hours, you'd be like, oh, that's a really long film. I'm not sure I want to sit there for three hours. And yet, almost as wrestling fans, we kind of, because just by default, kind of go, oh yeah, pay-per-view is 3 hours. But imagine a 4-hour film. You'd be appalled. You'd be like, there's no way I can sit through a 4-hour film. And it's the same with wrestling. Like 4 hours is too long. Especially if you're just going to sit in there. I mean, maybe it's that I'm not watching it down the bar or I'm not kind of watching it by walking in and out of the room. I just sit there and watch it. And after 4 hours, I'm just like, no more wrestling.
This is why Don't stop throwing people for two months
because it just burns me out.
It's true. I thought 4 hours were too long. And the couple of matches before the Taker one, I was, even though it was, the people were putting their heart into it, I couldn't care. I kept sending to you and my son who was sitting next to me, just, I just don't care about this. I don't know why, but I literally don't care. But he picked it back up at the end. But it's funny if that was a game, obviously games you get up and walk around, you leave for a certain period of time. But I think it does it better with long films than a 4-hour pay-per-view. A 4-hour film, okay, that'd be a stretch, but at least they have different scenes and stuff. Not that I wanted to see a romantic scene between Brock and Undertaker before they had the match to set up the story.
Even though it did involve Brock's penis a lot. The Lana Summer Rae bollocks.
Yeah, but it all ends in a wrestling match. This is which we've always laughed. It's like, oh my God. I remember Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero. Like, whose son is it? Stuff like that. Why would they end that in a wrestling match? No sane person would end after they get the DNA.
Custody of my son. What?
In a court. There's only one way to settle the wrestling match. All right. But yeah, overall, I enjoyed it.
Right, my turn?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to go controversial here. I'm going to ask you a question.
Ooh,
and the chat's okay. Going to go. Okay, here we go. Is classic Doctor Who still important today? Discuss.
Oh, right. Well, I'm going
to. On Thursday, a bit of a plug here, I've got a Doctor Who Legacy show, and Katie Manning's coming on, who used to play Joe Grant for the Third Doctor. And the Third Doctor now was, a pretty long time ago. And. It's awesome that she's coming on and loads. I'm excited. It's brilliant. And we're going to ask loads of questions. But I kind of got me thinking, is it still relevant? Is it still important? Is it important for a modern fan? Like with my daughter Izzy and your children, whatever their names are, we're just going to, is it important to teach them the legacy of Doctor Who or actually is it a bit of a niche irrelevancy? What are your thoughts?
With Doctor Who in particular, I think not anymore. It's nice to have the history there. And when I wasn't interested in Doctor Who at all until my now old son, 16, so old. He was scared of an episode and asked me to watch it with him because he was scared. And it was the David Tennant. It was the Satan's Pit one.
Yeah.
With the Impossible Planet, I think was the first or second part to that, whatever. And I was like, oh, Doctor Who, I've never lied to you. When I was a kid, I remember it being on with Sylvester, was the Doctor in question. And I was just like, well, yeah, even as a kid, not really interested. And I sat down with that and I was like, this is really good. And it was the scene that hooked me. The scene was that was the bit where he was sitting down. He was like, don't turn around. And he's like, ah! the guy, and then with the writing all over his face, that bit. And I was like, this is brilliant. And from there, I went back. But I didn't go back to the classic series. I only went back to watch Eccleston's run as Doctor.
But don't you think that the current series, and by current series, I mean, you know, Christopher Eccleston onwards, wouldn't be nearly as good without the depth of history and the backstory and the, you know, the what's gone before?
I think it added a little bit, but they don't really mention it that much. If you know, it's little, like when Sarah Jane come back into it for the school reunion and stuff like that, there was little mentions, but he's never really went, oh, this is really important because this happened all these years ago. And
I think they script it carefully, though. I think they're aware that they've got four or five different audiences that watch the show, one of which is young kids that just need simple stories that they can understand. One of which is a slightly older fan that's only seen the modern series. And another is the fan who's watched Doctor Who religiously, has seen every single episode and can quote you season 4, episode 6. And so I think what they, from why I can thinking it through, what they tend to do is have a classic enemy or a classic character or a reference or a little line here or there or an object that's been seen before, but they don't spend their time going, ah, well, you know what that's from, you know what that's doing, and they'll kind of, you know, they kind of do it without shoving it in your face, but it is there. I mean, a lot of the enemies we've had in modern Doctor Who are classic enemies, you know, obviously there's the obvious ones like the Daleks and the Cybermen, but then there's less famous ones like the Autons or the, what's the ones that change, the big red suckery things that change into other enemies, or the great intelligence, you know, all of these are classic enemies, villains.
Yes, but the one I'm thinking of is I can't remember the name of the villains, but it's the lizard inside the armor, and it was Matt Smith's Doctor. They're on the Russian submarine.
It's the Ice Warrior.
Yeah, and it was like, oh yeah, I know them from a long time ago, and that was more or less the whole thing. There was nothing else about the history apart from that he knew that race from a long time ago in his life, and that was it. That's the setup, and that works. That's fine because I am that Doctor Who fan. I like the show because of the reboot, and I have tried to go back, but I'm very guilty of modern fanciness affecting the way I view everything: games, films, and TV series. If I go back and watch anything pre 1980s, I probably you know, the special effect, everything. I just can't get past that. I'm quite shallow with TV watching, probably. I can't see the bigger picture. So if it was an old classic film, Casablanca, for example, or something like that, I'd rather watch a modern, you know, the lighting's better, the camera effects better, and I can't get past that.
I'm split on this one because I'll fess up my where I am with this is that I want to watch classic Doctor Who. And I want to be as knowledgeable as a lot of the people in the posse, other people who watch me on my Twitch channel and stuff. And I've tried on many occasions to go back and watch classic Doctor Who. And actually on a few occasions, I've absolutely loved it. Like I went and watched a series for this Katie Manning interview on Thursday, which is called The Green Death. And it was brilliant. I mean, you know, like special effects and stuff. I can look past special effects, you know. I mean, I think the days of Minecraft and Terraria have taught us that, you know, you don't need special effects to make it good. I mean, but there were a few little cringeworthy moments. But overall, the plot line was good. It was tense. It was scary. It was good. And I watched another one with Clara, which was the, I can't remember the name of the series, but it was the second Doctor, and it was the Yetis and the Underground Station. And it was fantastic, but I've also tried to watch, you know, when it's just kind of on the horror channel, you know, I often kind of like, oh cool, classic Doctor Who's on, and I turn it over, and after 4 minutes I'm bored or it's weird or nothing's really happened, and it seems to be the pacing is very, very, very different and it's slow. And I was thinking about this, and I'm going to ask Katie about it, because they basically in the one I watched, The Green Death, it was 6 half-an-hour episodes rather than 1 one-hour episode. So they had a lot more time, which means you got to know lots of the incidental characters a lot better. And you got, you know, even the ones that die at the end, you know, that kind of thing. You know, you got to know everyone a little bit better. You got to spend a lot more time kind of finding out about the environment and, you know, where the aliens are and what's going on and those kind of things. And when the storyline's good, a bit like some sort of European cinema, you know, that's amazing. You're kind of like, oh man, I'm really involved in what's going on now. I care about every single character. But when it's bad, it's just slow and boring. And I think it's like, I'd be interested to get her opinions and also the people in the chat, you know, about, you know, whether this kind of change in pace to the modern era where it's very, very fast and storylines are done in an hour maximum, well, more like 45 minutes actually, you know, is kind of better or worse.
I agree, but I also think that's its weakness with yeah, the part where you're saying it's boring is because some of these supporting members that I suppose it could be the same today as well, actually, because I think of myself saying, oh, that character, God, I never want to see them again. But what the old series and the new series always seem to get right is the Doctor and the Companion. Always brilliant. I have watched at least one episode with all the Doctors just to go back and see if I could get into it. And all the Doctors are so different. And that's the part, you know, when he regenerates, he's a different guy with the same roles and et cetera, et cetera. I like each Doctor. I like. There's not one Doctor I don't really like. But it's everything else around them. It's just I don't like just little bit part of characters that have been horrible, can't act, or just I wouldn't, because that was the standard of the day. And obviously the standard goes up. But I don't, to answer your question, I don't think you need it, but I think it's a nice extra.
I think if you know, I'd have to agree with you that it's no longer important, but it's very nice to have it there. And it's, you know how, like, you know, for example, like, you know, we just watched SummerSlam and therefore we've enjoyed talking about SummerSlam and then reading stuff about SummerSlam and just kind of being involved in our little SummerSlam world. And I've done it with mods today in Skyrim. You know, I'm playing Skyrim, but I'm also enjoying just being in a Skyrim world. And I think if you're a Doctor Who fan, it's lovely to be able to embrace that Doctor Who-ness by not only with all the modern stuff, but going back and finding out more and watching more episodes and then reading stuff about, you know, it shows that there's, you know, rather than just kind of watching a show and then being kind of like, well, that's it for a week. You know, there's just a ton of resources out there for you to go and investigate the world of your characters even further. And I think it's a really lovely addition, but important, I'm not sure.
Yes.
Your turn.
Right. Again, this is a question for you. And I only realized this just today, on the day I was recording. I was asked by my son, my older son again, who I've mentioned a couple times already. He was asking me about my vault. He's playing the mobile and tablet game.
The Fallout
Shower. Thank you. I've completely forgot what it was called. It's professional.
Very addictive game. It's very similar. For those of you who haven't played it, it's a little bit like things like Simpsons Tapped Out or Heyday, in that it's like a kind of a resource gathering game, but it's a very addictive one. And it's a lot shorter as well. Like, you know, it takes you a couple of weeks to play rather than a couple of years of your life.
Yeah. So he asked me, and I answered without even thinking. I said to him, no, the only mobile game I'm really into is Hearthstone. And if I ever sit down and I've got the time to play a game, I normally play a real game. I'll come back to that word I just said there.
A real
game? Yeah, I know. That's where I stay. And I normally play a real game on my Vita if I can't sit in front of a telly, or I play PC, Xbox, PS4, PS3. And I went, ooh, real game. Did I just say that? Like, I realized that I actually probably don't consider them real games because they're mobile games, which is, I know, wrong, but that's now thinking about it, that's
how
I feel.
Are you a console elitist?
Well, no, because I do play PC as well. So this is why I can't get past it. So my question to you, what is the big difference between them? Is it length? Is it graphics? Is it lack of storyline? Is it? What is it? What is the big difference between a mobile game and, as I would put it, a real game?
I think it depends on the game. But for me, the difference between the genres is a lot of mobile games are designed to be dipped in and dipped out. And you can insert your own sexual joke there if you wish. But, like, you know, take Fallout Shelter. It's designed for you to be able to pop on, collect your resources, maybe make a decision, not necessarily, log off, carry on with your day, get on the train, grab a bite to eat, log on, quickly grab your resources, log off. And you could say exactly the same thing about Simpsons Tapped Out and Heyday and Boom Beach and Clash of Clans. You know, there's an awful lot of games of that style where you just jump on, do something, jump off. Whereas console games, PC games, you sit down and you go, right, I am going to play a game. And you have a gaming session rather than kind of stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. So there are a lot of games on mobile which I would say are far more kind of immersive games, you know, and Hearthstone were definitely one of them, like you mentioned. But I think there's lots and lots of others too. You know, the Room, for example. I mean, the Room was not a dip down, dip out game. The Room was incredible. And there's lots of other kind of little puzzle games and stuff. But for me, I think the difference is it's that idea of whether it's kind of like casual short gaming or whether it's like extended session gaming. What do you think? Do you think I've got to the nub of the issue, or do you think there's something else?
I don't know. I think it's a combination of things, because using the Room as example, I've got the Room downloaded on my tablet and I played it once. So I went, oh, this is quite good. And I've never touched it again. And every time I do have the time to sit down again, like if I can sit in front of my PC or a TV, I'm playing PC, Xbox, blah, blah. Yeah. And if I'm not, if I'm in bed and, you know, the missus is watching TV or something, then I'd whip out the Vita. Just like, I play a little game on that. And that's a small screen. So I can't put my finger exactly why I feel like this, why it doesn't hold my interest. Because, you know me, I love games. Games are the best thing and the worst thing in my life. The amount of arguments, stop playing games and do this, watch the telly instead. And other arguments I have with my better half. But I don't know why. I was thinking, and it just popped out of my mouth when I was talking to him. And it's weird. I just cannot get into them. And I think the more I thought about a lot of it, I didn't want to come into this and go, what do you think? This is the reason. I think, what about you? I don't know. Moving on. I didn't want to do that. So, I put some little bit of thought into it. And again, a number of things. I think it's the touchscreen. I hate playing any game that requires precision, like a platformer or something like that, with touchscreen. I have to have a physical feeling of the button and the D-pad and et cetera in my hand. That really drives. I've tried to play Sonic on the tablet, and it's just
down. I mean, I don't know if you played the Rayman game, but the Rayman is one of the game is actually very, very good. But it's one of those ones where you only have to. There's only one.
Yeah,
button.
That done it very well. And again, I think I did all the levels on that. That's one of the rare ones I did, because I didn't have to move my finger and it was just there. But with Sonic, literally, because you can't feel if it's on the button on the screen, you just slip off it. It drives me crazy. So there's that. There's,
I don't know, if just mobile gaming very comfy.
Yes. Well, that's what I mean. It just doesn't.
If I'm sitting on my PC, you can't see me talking. This is a podcast. But if I play my PC stuff, I'm on my gaming chair. My left hand delicately goes on my little rubber sucker, and the keys go in there. My mouse pad wrist holder's there, and I'm perfectly in my gaming zone and I'm comfortable. And if I'm holding a controller, you'll note I've just picked up a PlayStation 3 pad, for those of you that are listening on the audio stuff. My hand fits around it, snugly. My thumbs curl around it. I am engaged with this game. Whereas with mobile stuff, you one hand has to kind of hold the bloody thing, which gives you wrist ache after a while.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of tapping at it kind of awkwardly, and it's just, it's not a good experience.
That's why with the Vita and even the 3DS, both your hands are on it like a control pad, and you're just looking down. So it's got that advantage. You're right, though, about holding it. When it's my tablet's a big tablet. Oh, God, hang on. Rest it on that hand. God forbid I drop it or something like that.
I wonder if anyone listening does this as well, but do you ever try and balance it on weird body parts? Not that
yes.
body part, but on your knee, on your leg, and you kind of you pull out the little flap at the back if you've got a little stand, and you're like, right, yep. I'm going to balance it on my knee so I can lay backwards. And at some point in the evening, it always falls on my face. At some point in the evening, the whole thing will just falls forward and just goes dunk. And I'm like,
It's normally when I did it just about an hour ago. I was playing Hearthstone, and my legs were crossed. So one foot on the floor, leg crossed.
Nice.
Sitting there, and it was on my leg at a slight slant, and it fell down, hit my thumb. I was playing Hearthstone, and my opponent had one guy out, and I played Flamestrike against one guy, and I was like, oh, you son of a bitch. Oh, I was so angry. And my kids were in the room, so I saw in front of them. That's the way it happened. Sorry. You motherfucker. Oh my God. And the guy, obviously being a Hearthstone player, had to rub it in my face going, I thank you. It's like, you bastard. You do not like that. There was some sort of error. It's like the time I accidentally shot myself in the face with a fireball because I was playing on a laptop with a touch pad.
That was against
me.
You killed yourself.
Yes, I did. Well, when I didn't. I think I put my health to 2, and you just went fireball twice or something. I just don't feel they're a proper, complete experience. And I think there's lots of exceptions, but that's the way I feel.
I think we might be in a transition period in that I think mobile gaming has started off, and it's already changed, but mobile gaming has started off being very, very, very casual. And someone in the chat used the word apps, casual apps. But I think it's introduced a lot of people to gaming that wouldn't necessarily do it. And that includes, non-gamers, people that wouldn't traditionally call themselves, people that wouldn't call themselves gamers spend many, many hours gaming now. But there's a lady at my work who, she's very kind of stern and, quite authoritative. And, you'd and you'd expect her to be very kind of traditional in her ways, and she probably is, but she's also got one of the highest level farms on Heyday I've ever seen, which is genius. But I think what you might find is, as the years go on, a lot of those people that have been introduced to gaming through casual gaming, they'll start to release apps that are a lot more, as you might call it, immersive, and they'll still be bloody uncomfy, but, you know, like longer adventures and things. And you might get people that what I'm saying in a really long way, which I often do, is take a long time to say things, is that I think in the long term, I think it's good for gaming, because I think it gets more people gaming. And if there's more people gaming, it means there's more money there, which means more things are being developed. It means more people will try new things, innovation, yada, 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 and the world's a better place.
Which obviously this could lead on to another question on what is real gaming opposed to, or what is a real gamer opposed to a casual gamer? Because from those standards you've set, the missus is well against gaming. She's really annoyed with my pastime, which is, you know, ground rock for a really healthy relationship. She was well addicted to Candy Crush, like really addicted to it. She was always on Candy Crush. So she's playing a game. You're a gamer. I pointed that out to her once, and she was like, no, she stopped playing that after, I think I said that to her. Don't dirty word.
Like that episode of Big Bang Theory where Penny gets addicted to World of Warcraft.
Yeah. So, right, moving on.
Okay. Right. Here's one. So earlier, I was actually, shall I go news or gaming? As soon as you just talked gaming, let's go news. Okay. Donald Trump and Jeremy Corbyn. We've mentioned them briefly over the last few weeks. There has been in the news and in the world a kind of backlash against normal politicians. You know, there's a lot of politicians that have been kind of very middle of the road. Let's not say anything too crazy. Let's not go too one way or the other. Let's just be very, very kind of practical. Very, very.
You mean all politicians, basically.
And you can justify how that's happened. You can see how it's happened. You know, the media causes things. You know, your politicians have ended up having to be very, very careful what they say all the time, because everything gets recorded, everything gets used against them, yada, yada, yada. But as a backlash to years and years and years of this kind of consensus politics, look at it, Google that if you don't know what I'm talking about, there now seems to have been the rise of a few individuals who are kind of more extremists. And by extremists, I don't mean they're trying to blow up towers and stuff. But you've got the rise of the extreme right-wingers and the extreme left-wingers. And in Britain at the moment, we've got the possibility of a guy called Jeremy Corbyn becoming the leader of the Labour Party, which is basically the second biggest party in politics. In America at the moment, you've got the possibility of Donald Trump becoming president. Now, I'm not asking you, Spud, and I'm not asking the people listening whether you like Donald Trump or whether you like Jeremy Corbyn or whether you like Nigel Farage or whether you like, you know, whether you like these people. But just in general, do you think this, the presence of these extremists and the rise of their popularity, is a good thing or a bad thing or a dangerous thing or an interesting thing? Or, you know, what's your view on their kind of presence?
I think it's a good thing. I hate the fact that, especially in the UK, I'm quite ignorant to politics outside the UK, I can admit, unless it's a big election. And normally I dip in and do a little bit of reading to find out what it is for America, since they're, you know, the biggest economy in the world, etc. But I like knowing what I'm getting for my money and for my vote. And, you know, if it's, they all say the same thing in a different way. They don't answer the questions. It's been going on since I was a little boy. And it's just the same thing over and over. So to see these people come out, and despite if you just disagree with them, at least you know that they think that and you can disagree with them. Where, I'm not going to name any politicians again, but, you know, any, you know, politician from maybe the last few elections could have come out and said, oh, you know, I've more jobs for people who need jobs. Yeah. And the next person says it. And, oh, everyone gets treated equally. Oh, yeah. Okay, brilliant. Oh, you know, this and that. Everything the same. So you don't really know what they're thinking, which is bad, because how can you vote if they're all saying the same thing and they're not being truthful? And then it comes down to things like, there was the Gordon Brown incident when he got in the car and he was still microphone. Do you remember that? Yeah. So that's obviously how he felt, but you never know. He couldn't turn around to the person because everyone would say, oh, how dare you say that? But if we knew that's how he felt, then people who agreed with him would have voted for him. And I think, with Corbyn and everyone else, I think if people were more honest, then you knew what you were getting, and the people that agree with that would vote for that, and then everyone would know what they're getting and what they're getting into and the fours and against and everything else. I can't see a downside to it, opposed to if someone with a crazy idea comes. Yeah,
I agree with your pro, which is that you have people that are passionate and you can see that they genuinely believe in what they're saying. And I think that's, I see the positive. Where the negative comes along is that I think one of the reasons we've ended up with kind of consensus politics and middle of the road politicians is that the extremes of any political system have kind of been proved to not work. You know, you go too far to the left, you end up with kind of communism, or you end up with a crappy economy, or you end up, you know, with kind of strikes all over the place. And you go through too far to the right and you end up with kind of people in poverty, or you end up with the rich getting richer, or you end up with kind of with a kind of quite an uncaring kind of society that's maybe a little bit too, you know, the divisions between religion and politics get too kind of blurred and things like that. And what worries me about the extreme, more extreme views coming to the fore is that you might lose that kind of the handbrake, you know, the thing that stops things swinging too far to the left or the right. You know, the extremists are more likely to make decisions that could actually be dangerous. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I agree that, you know, crazy, if someone, for example, was absolutely mental and saying horrible, horrible things, then the chances are they're going to attract people like them to vote for them. And no, if there's a lot of them.
I don't think crazy people, because I'm not saying Donald Trump is Hitler and that Jeremy Corbyn is Stalin, because that's just not true and that would be unfair. But they are both more further away, a lot further from the middle than a lot of other politicians. And I wonder if therefore the impact they could have on their countries could be more significant. But maybe that's a good thing. You know, maybe people, you know, should have real alternatives when it comes to elections, you know, rather than just kind of like, do you want this guy who's slightly on the left or this guy who's slightly on the right? Maybe it should be like, you know, I'm way over here and I'm way over there. Who do you want? You know, maybe it's a more exciting election. It's more meaningful.
This is the thing. I don't see why someone has to be in all their views left or all their views right. I mean, there's always, I was explaining politics to one of my sons about, and I was using a party that I find quite negative and horrible, and that I'm not even really in contention anymore, is personally the BNP. And I was saying that the problem with them is they list four things, and I'm on board of those four things, and it's like, yeah, jobs for people who need jobs, and this, oh yeah, yep, that's great, people need jobs, that's great, and you know, we'll stop all this horribleness happening, yeah, that's great, and oh, you know, and we'll do this, and we'll, oh yeah, yeah, and then we'll be really racist and horrible, and it's like, no, don't say that, no, don't, why? The three were good, and each person has to surely not just be, all right, well, I'm left, so I'm going to, every single political point, I'm just going to go left with. Why can't people be different shades of everything? Why can't they say, well, okay, well, that bit, I agree with this, and that bit, I agree with left, and that bit, I agree with right. Because that's personally how I feel. Some things I am on the right, and I can say how it makes sense, you know, with far right, and some things, no, don't do that, that's horrible, far left, and that's the way I am. I can't see why people have to be completely one way or the other.
One of our chat members just said politics is about ideologies, nothing else than ideologies. I actually disagree with them, because I think Corbyn versus Trump is ideology versus ideology, but I think a lot of modern politicians aren't particularly ideological, and I think that's one of the reasons why it kind of feels a lot more kind of dull. Anyway, that has been our politics little chat. It is your turn.
Right. Well, I was going to bring up the point that I've forgotten, but I've just remembered, so that's good. Have you heard about the game called Destiny? Going back to gaming now. Destiny.
Yeah, the Halo follow-up.
Yes, the Halo follow-up. It's it was kind of open world, not really. It's a massive online multiplayer shooter, but it's like a light version of that, and it's got very good first-person shooting mechanics. But one of the main topics, and everyone's made fun out of it, was the actor called Peter Dinklage, who's in Game of Thrones and the latest X-Men film. Really good actor, especially in Game of Thrones. Oh, I love that character so much. He's brilliant. And everyone's just, he has no charisma and nothing. He offers nothing to the role. He plays like a little aide and guide, which is a little robot, floating robot called Ghost. Boy, he is a ghost. I think it's Spark or something. I can't remember the name exactly.
I think I've seen this on IGN. Like, was he sacked or moved on? But
like, no, he's done all the, you know, the game's been out for almost a year now. But what they're doing is they're removing all his dialogue he's recorded. And they're getting famous voice actor, which you may know as Nathan Drake and Deadpool from the Deadpool game and many other games. Penguin from Batman, Arkham series. Nolan North.
Not Nolan North. Oh my God.
Re-record all his audio. So has there ever been a bigger kick in the balls for anyone who's done a job and then had this kind of thing happen? In the history of, I can't think of anything that, I mean, that's got to be pretty bad. Not that he cares because he's on a big TV show, but to hear that your work's been just deleted and someone else has done it.
I think the short answer is yes. I mean, you know, in the world of TV and film and business, absolutely. I mean, there's scandals and stuff all the time. I think it's quite new to the world of gaming. And I think it's one of the things that we're going to see more of as movie stars and Hollywood actors and celebrities kind of get more involved in the world of gaming. Because you had Kevin Spacey in Call of Duty, didn't you?
Yeah, but that was a success story, in my opinion.
I'm not saying whether it's a good or bad thing, but I'm saying that the more you have people that you know involved in the games, because let's go properly back. I mean, okay. I'm vaguely aware of the guy that made Mario, like Miyamoto or something like that.
Yes, something like that. I can't remember exactly.
Involved in the world of Sonic, and I couldn't name you anyone involved with Street Fighter 2. And I could tell you that Rare made GoldenEye, but I couldn't tell you any of the development team, and it didn't need voices and yada, yada, yada. But you see where I'm going with this. Like, you know,
yeah.
Like the idea of actually knowing the names of people that are involved with computer games is quite new. And I mean, you know, there was the whole Ken Levine thing a couple of years ago when he scrapped Rational Games, and that was quite a big thing. I mean, that's a similar idea, you know, someone kind of leaving a company and all those kind of things. So, I'm not surprised, but I think it was at some point it was going to happen that there was going to be some sort of firing or someone being removed. And, you know, how does the games come? I mean, here's another thing. I mean, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You remember, you know, the Hulk Hogan racist thing. I mean, at some point you're going to have someone who's involved with a computer game who is in it for a long time, who then turns out to be murderer, pedophile, you know, something horrific. And then whichever games company is going to be like, what do we do? And have to replace them with someone else or delete their character from the game, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. But and that should be, but with things like you did such a bad job, we're going to delete all. He must have just, I would love to hear his agent. I mean, would he have cared? That's the thing, because he is a big deal now. He's a very big deal. He's been in the latest X-Men film, and, you know, I'm sure he was just in another film with Adam Sandler that is probably not good, about video games. I can't remember what it's called. But
Adam Sandler movie, God.
Yeah, exactly.
Hang on, an Adam Sandler movie with a vertically challenged person. I mean, that's going to be classy, isn't it?
Yes, that is probably. And it's about computer games. Apparently, it's really degrading and patronizing to computer game players and gamers in general. But it's kind of done like it's not. Like, hey, we get you cool dudes, and it's just like an embarrassing granddad trying to get down with the kids and all that kind of stuff. But I just thought that was him. I personally, even if I was a big-time actor and I did a lot of work on a game, all these lines of dialogue, and then they called me up and went, hi, we're kind of deleting all your dialogue. I'm like, why? Oh, we're kind of really boring and didn't show any emotion in all the lines. Just that little problem there, sorry. But we're getting really cool guy doing it called Nolan North. Everyone loves Nolan North. Like, oh, my God. Oh, man, that must have not been good. But, yeah, if it was someone like, I'm trying to think of someone who did loads and loads of dialogue, like Troy Baker with Bioshock as an example, like his dialogue was all over that. What would they do? Because if he did something bad, because he wasn't bad in the job, but if he did something horrible, not that he would, because I hear he's a really nice guy. It's kind of my basis.
If it was something in the past, like if, you know, if it was Troy Baker with Bioshock Infinite and nothing happened, you know, it would be like, you know, it'd be like the Cosby Show, you know, like it's like, you know, it's there now, it's part of history. But if it was a currently updated, still supported game, that would then cause an issue.
So you think, for example, if, like, again, Kevin Spacey, if he did something bad tomorrow, come out in the news, did something bad, not he did again, just in case we get sued for something. But do you reckon they would go back and, especially digital copies or updates and patches, do you reckon they'd sort that?
I don't know.
That'd be a big job.
Ooh. But it is one of the advantages and disadvantages of putting real people into these things.
Mm.
But it's, I think. I mean, there's a few. I played Fez. I mean, I talked about it last week with my computer games that don't really make sense. I played Fez, and apparently the designer of Fez is really unpopular. Like, I didn't look into it, but I was looking for some solutions to puzzles, and someone was like, "Oh, I'm not playing that game because I don't like the developer and things." And I think it's I'm not always sure it's a good thing when personalities in games become entwined, because you can start prejudging things based on who's done it. Like if you know if you're going to go and watch a Pixar movie, you've got like a prior expectation before you already go in. Or like we just mentioned Adam Sandler. Like, if I went to watch, I wouldn't go and see an Adam Sandler movie because it's an Adam Sandler movie. But if you described a movie to me, I might go and see it. And I think with gaming, you've got to be careful as well. You know, I'm not sure personalities in gaming are a good thing. I think there's more downsides than upsides. What do you think?
Well, there are downsides, yes. So, and the one of the downsides, I mean, that particular example with Fez was that people were being horrendous to him, but then he was being horrendous to people back. And someone said a horrible comeback, and he just went, "That's it, I quit." And there were no Fez 2 and blah, blah, blah. And he just took his ball and went home. And, you know, there's a split. There's like, you know, well, you shouldn't treat someone like that, and you shouldn't go at them like that. Just, you know, they did put a lot into this game. And the Call of Duty developers a couple of years ago, it wasn't last one, the year before, I think they sent out a patch to adjust some guns, so they, you know, they toned down some how powerful guns were. They got death threats from people to them and their families. That is terrible. Jeez, if you think your gun's brilliant, just get over it. If you care that much how great your gun in Call of Duty is, then you need to go and see someone about this, because there's more important things in life than one gun in one game.
Well, yeah, there's the M60.
There's another gun.
In Battlefield.
Well, there you go. That's really important. But the other thing is that works both ways, because if you said to me, oh, there's a new... trying to think of an example now. There's a new Epic game, or there's a new... I'm trying to think of a particular guy that I love his games. Just Rocksteady, for example. I love all their Batman games. So the next game, I'm going to be like, oh my God. Just like in a film, if you said, oh, there's a new film coming from Marvel Studios, I love all my superhero films. You know, they don't seem to make mistakes anymore. They even made Ant-Man good. So I'm gonna go and see that. And a director, Scorsese, I'm going to see his film. Quentin Tarantino, I'm going to see his film. But at the same time,
that's the advantage as well. Of having the personality things, you can become a fan of a particular work, and they can become almost like a kind of auteur, to use a... I mean, there's definitely advantages to it.
Yeah.
And also, I think I'm right in saying this, computer games these days outsell movies anyway, don't they?
They do. They make more money from them. Well, the successful ones. I think Call of Duty.
So although 5. They don't get as much mainstream press, or you know, they're not splashed all over the gossip mags and all that kind of thing, the way movie stars are. The money is there, and if the money is there, then the people that are involved are important.
Exactly.
And I've got a question for you.
Go hit me
so
in.
I
you
opened my Hearthstone packs earlier. From the new Grand Tournament,
and you had a bash, yes.
I had a golden bash, and there was I can't remember what the card was called, like something like Stable Master or something like that, and it was a girl, and she was next to a horse, and I was like, oh, it's a horse, and then I was like, and then one of my chat members was like, oh no, it's a unicorn, and it was a brown horse with a horn, and I was like, that's not a unicorn, because it's brown, and then I was like, oh my goodness, I just sound like I've said something racist, and then I was like, well, hang on a minute. A unicorn is a white horse with a horn. And then I was like, well, a unicorn doesn't exist. Therefore, what colour is it? Does it matter what colour it is? And if it does exist, would there be different races of it? And if so, is the definition of unicorn wrong? So are unicorns white?
Wow, that's racist, man. racist against unicorns. I don't know. Since they don't exist, this is a very hard question, Addy. What are you doing to me, man? Well, I've always seen white unicorns in... you know, fantasy and stuff as well. So,
I think I've occasionally seen a pink unicorn.
Yeah, in a game as well, Spelunky or something. I can't remember what it's called. No, not Spelunky. Peggle. Oh, was that just a horse? I don't know. But yeah, I think possibly. But I've never seen a brown unicorn.
Then it raises a question, because I mentioned this to Claire, and she said that she'd actually had this debate, and I was like, oh my goodness, you've had a brown unicorn debate? And she said, yes, I was told about it in a psychology lecture, and I was like, what? And she said it raises a question about how many people you need to say something before it becomes true. Because if one person turned around and said, well, a unicorn can be any colour you want, everyone would go, ah, no, unicorns are white. But if you know, hundreds of thousands of people said, well, unicorns can be any color, then unicorns would then officially be any color. And she said it was used in a psychology lecture to kind of discuss the idea of when concepts become true and false, based on how many people kind of believe in them. And I'm going to make a really random segue here, which everyone in the chat is going to go, whoa, he went from that to that. Because obviously there's been a big debate in America and in the UK and in other countries at the moment about things like gay marriage and stuff, like what is marriage? And lots of people have come up in the news and kind of said, marriage is between a man and a woman and God has designed it between a man and a woman. And they absolutely believe that. And they think that marriage is designed by God and marriage is, you know, this is what marriage is. But then there's a huge other group who are saying, actually, no, marriage is not that. Marriage is something completely different. So, you know, how many people does it take to change an idea? It's such a cool idea. It really got my mind thinking about, you know, like what is truth, man? You know, when does, you know, are things, you know, does it, especially conceptual things. I don't mean like, you know, is it red or is it blue? I don't mean things like, you know, how long is it? But I mean, you know, conceptual ideas, like how many people have to kind of believe in them to think it's true? You know, is it just a numerical thing? You know, if 50 people, if say unicorns can be brown, can they be brown? Or is it always subjective? And the same goes for marriage and other things. I think it's a cool idea, don't you think? Is your head racing like mine?
Well, you've completely destroyed my identity as a person. Thank you. I always like to think I was an individual, and I thought that, you know, I always went with the right thing. But now you're making me think that I'm racist against unicorns because people told me to be. So thank you for that. But to answer your original question, now that I've put some thought into it, yes, there should be brown unicorns, surely. They can't all be white. That'd be ridiculous. There has to be some variation in there. DNA to create different colors and variations. Yeah, maybe the horn's different shapes. Maybe, you know, without getting rude, but maybe it may be different shapes. Maybe it's a little spike.
Just a fat unicorn.
It could be a fat gray unicorn. Oh my God, the answer was right in front of us all along. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool.
What else is a horn?
I'm trying not to be rude here. antlers. No.
Must be like an insect.
The beetle, that's got a little
maybe
horn.
That's just like a really, really like
small black unicorn,
like, you know, the Peter Dinklage of unicorns.
Oh no, you went there, man. Why did you go there, man? I tried to get past that whole segment without saying, why did you do that, man? Poor Peter Dinklage. First he gets taken out of destiny, now he's called a little beetle unicorn. Oh dear.
Call him a beetle. Okay, right. Do we have any questions?
We do. We have loads, so we're going to save some.
We've got like 4 minutes until.
Okay, 4 minutes.
But before we do questions, let me just say, if you've agreed or disagreed with anything we've talked about today, we'd love to hear from you. You know, stick comments on the YouTube video or write into us at spudaddypodcast@gmail.com. And we'd love to get more of kind of interactive mail section kind of going. And I'm aware we've covered some quite controversial topics tonight, from classic Doctor Who to extreme politics to the white unicorns and Jon Stewart at SummerSlam. So, you know, if you've got something to say, you can say it and you might just end up on the show. Yes.
Cool. And also don't forget to follow us on Twitter at SpudAddyCast. And don't forget to send us your questions, #AskSpudAddy. So I actually can find your questions much easier than
Sorry, the email address, spudaddycast@gmail.com.
Yes.
Sorry, not spudaddypodcast, not spudaddypodcast. Anyway, yes, we've got 4 minutes. Go.
Questions. Right, okay, cool. I'm going to just randomly pick some out. So first question is from Bree. Bree R. What is your favourite childhood video game and what was your favourite childhood console? Or favourite console as a kid? I'm paraphrasing, sorry. Go.
You go for it.
Mine, I put some thought in this because I read it before. Mine would be Super Nintendo. That was my favourite. And the original Mario Kart. I loved that game so much. I wanted to marry it and move away and not come out my house with it.
I don't know. I feel sad that I have to limit it to just one. I'm going to take the word childhood to mean not teenage.
Yeah, not your all-time favourite game. Your favourite.
64 and stuff.
Yeah, not your favourite game of all time, just your favourite childhood game.
I think childhood would have to be the Game Boy because that was the one I had.
Ooh.
And it was the only one I could kind of afford things for. I mean, I had a Master System eventually, and I probably ended up, but, you know, the Game Boy was my childhood one. So I guess it would have to be a game on that, which, I mean, dare I say Tetris? I don't know. No, ooh, probably more Super Mario, probably Mario on the Game Boy.
The Search for Golden Coins.
It would probably scare me how much of that I could still remember. Like, I'd start playing a level and start jumping at the right point, because I know there's a rocket about to come in from the left and things. I completed the New Game Plus on that.
Did you?
Ooh. Yeah. And in those days, there was no save, so you actually had to sit there and play through the whole game twice in a row.
Oh yeah, I remember those days. Oh god, oh, I don't give a. I'm so glad I'm in an age of save games and stuff. Not for me. Right, next question. We got a question about SummerSlam, which we've already asked about Arrow, so we'll ignore that one. If you had, right, this is from Jenny. If you had an opportunity to live forever, would you take it? That's deep, man. Go. I don't know what to say.
Probably not, but at the same time, choosing death feels very final. But I feel as I'm getting older, I'm going through life stages, and I feel it especially with Izzy, you know, that you are the child, and then you're the teenager, and then you're the 18-year-old, and then you're the 20-something, and then you're the, I better sort out my career now, and then you're the young parent, and then eventually I'll be like the slightly higher in my job with a young older kid type thing. I think life has stages, and one of those stages is to not be there anymore, which I know is very deep and philosophical, and I haven't fully thought it through, but I don't think I'd want to live forever. What about you?
Again, there's conditions to this. So if I was in my current form and I didn't get older, and this is the important bit.
Your current form is obviously physical perfection.
It is. Oh, God, if it was like my current form without the ability to lose weight or anything like that, then, oh, jeez. You know these vampire films, you know, when they bite the person, then that's them, whoever, and they can't change anything about them. Like it was in Interview with Vampire and True Blood and stuff like that. Once you get bitten, doesn't matter what about physically about you, that is the way you are forever. So if I was always, doesn't matter how much exercise I did, I was just, I'd be like, oh man, come back and bite me and turn me into a vampire in about 6 months when I've been to the gym for a bit. But if I had no family and I could stay exactly the way I am, I would live forever until the world imploded or whatever. I think, but I don't think with the family like I am now, that I would want to see them go before me. I think that would be the thing that gets me. I think I would like to.
It was like a Planet Earth David Attenborough type documentary, but I don't think it was David Attenborough. And might have been Richard Dawson. I'm afraid we had a small technical glitch there, so we will have to hear the rest of the Live Forever debate on next week's episode. Thank you so much for watching this evening. I hope you've had fun, and please do follow the channel and recommend us to your friends if you have had fun. Do send in your little notes and questions and stuff, and we'll get back to them. But this has been Spud Addy, and we'll catch you guys real soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Spud Addy, you Spud and I'm Addy. Just listen, you'll glisten, cause you'll be so happy. Our podcast is random talk on this and on that. But what did you expect from potatoes and fat? Yeah, what did you expect from potatoes and fat?